Welcome to the Social Media Church podcast. This is Neil Smith, and I'm joined by a good friend that I met at the eChurch Summit last year, Wes Gay. Wes, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Nils. Thanks for having me.
Well, Wes, we have been on a journey after meeting each other. I still remember you coming and introducing yourself. I knew of you from the internet.
That's an ominous way to introduce me, saying you knew of me from the internet.
I feel like almost everyone I meet them on the internet like 2 years before I actually face-to-face. So we met, but there's always kind of those times too, when you meet somebody from the internet and you're like, are they going to be different than they are on the internet? Are they going to look different? Are they going to, what's this going to be like? I already know each other a little bit. But we met, it was the conference of the decade for me as a, mm-hmm. I get to hop around and go to a lot of different conferences. Selfishly, it was fantastic. I brought my family. We went to Disneyland. But just beyond the Disneyland physical place that we were at, the experience from mm-hmm. it was kind of the anti-conference of,
yeah,
it wasn't, there weren't really lights or flashy mm-hmm. stuff, or even there was no music. It was literally just meat. Like, come down, you sit down, like, we're not gonna have appetizers, we're not even gonna waste your time with a vegetable, we're gonna just give you a steak.
Yeah,
is what I felt like I got into at the summit. And so mm-hmm. it was packed with meat. The level of speak, I mean, we started with John Maxwell. And then we were like the sandwich meat in the middle of bread, John Maxwell and Bob Goff on the back end of the conference. And so it was just a fantastic conference. I'm curious, as you look back mm-hmm. To last year's conference, what was your highlight from last year?
Yeah, super high level. It was interesting. What I thought was the greatest thing about it was that there's no other conference quite like it, where you're bringing people like a John Maxwell and a Bob Goff into the room, but you're also bringing executive pastors and leaders from churches that say, hey, this is how we do this thing at our church, and here's how we got here, and let me help you think through a strategy. Yep. You know, there's a thousand conferences out there that bring in the New York Times bestsellers. They're motivational. They may have some practicality. It gets you thinking, but there's no moment where you can really hear from practitioners in the field. But on the other extreme, you have conferences of people you've never heard of, and it's all practitioners.
Yep.
And so I think it's this really interesting blend. The Push Bay, a lot of times, eChurch uses the phrase where Bible college meets business school. Which is something that one of the speakers, a guy named Blue Van Dyke, said last year. So for me, that was the biggest thing, big high level, from a content standpoint. Man, hearing from a guy like John Maxwell, who's been at this forever, that was the first time I'd ever heard Bob Goff. And in an hour and a half with Bob, you laugh, you cry, you do it all. Like, he's just all over the place, and he's funny, but he's got such good content. And then in between, like every other event, meeting people, like you, finally getting to meet our mutual friend Kenny Jang for the 7 minutes he was there and the 900 pictures he took.
That's right.
In typical Kenny fashion. But, and then I obviously, being at Disneyland doesn't hurt. When there's a Starbucks Reserve at Downtown Disney where they do the super fancy pants coffee, I'm in.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm not that much of a coffee drinker to understand the value of Reserve. I've had it a couple of times, but for those of you who are big coffee drinkers, that is an additional selling point. I felt like, and I don't know what it was, Wes, at the conference, but I felt like it was, I don't know if it's how it was structured, but I built more relationships at that conference than I have at any other conference that I've been to. And that's not just because I was a presenter or I was, in the green room. It was with the participants. I engage with more participants, and not just at the conference, after the conference, mm-hmm. just follow-up relationships that were formed there. I don't know what, it was structured in a way that naturally was conversational, even from a presentation standpoint.
Yeah.
I just felt like there was so much great networking that happened.
Yeah, I agree. And I got, like you, I had people I'm still talking to, almost a year later. And some of it was just the pace of the event. It wasn't hectic. There was room and kind of space built in. But I know you and I, we didn't do it together, but we sat on different panel conversations in these sessions. And I think what happens is that kind of Q&A interactivity with the audience really opens you up and says, oh, he's not just a guy who has a standard keynote that he's just going to deliver.
Yep.
But they had some questions that were prepared for each of our groups. And then it was, hey, let's see what the audience thinks. And that because we're able to speak directly into what's going on for the people asking those questions, it was a great jumping off point for the hallway conversations or at lunch or at dinner or even breakfast to just chat for a few minutes about whatever was kind of at the forefront of their mind. So you and people like me and you could come alongside and say, here's what we know and here's what we've seen. Here's how I think it can help you.
Yep.
So I agree. It was really cool to be able to interact with participants that way and even other speakers too, and get to meet so many people I've never heard of. And interestingly enough, I didn't bring my family, but I land in the airport. I go to the baggage claim, get my bags. I'm there with somebody from eChurch. And then there's another guy there from eChurch with another speaker. And they had speaker hosts for all of us. And so we get in the rental car to go to Disneyland. And the guy and I start talking. And we realize we flew 5 hours from Atlanta to LA to realize we live 20 minutes from each other.
That's hilarious.
So, and he and I, Chris Ames at North Point Community Church, the director of digital environments there. So he and I have connected some. I think we're going to get together soon right after the holidays. But yeah, it's so interesting all the people you get to meet. Again, people you've seen online or interacted with in different capacities and finally get to have conversations with in person is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait, and even following up to that, I mean, a few things that have happened functionally.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm a massive fan of PushPay, even before the conference, of the excellence of technology PushPay creates. I met Elliot when they're like early days as a company. And so it's been fun to watch them grow. But the excellence of the conference was tremendous. But Chris Heeslip's presentation last year, where he really spoke to the church needs excellence in technology and should lead the way in technology. As it wasn't a conference that was motivational in nature, it was more a conference that was very functional in nature. His presentation just lit a fire in me of really where I want even this podcast to be a driver for the church maximizing social media as a technology to further its mission and its goals. And that was a presentation that stuck out to me. I do want to, I want to talk about this year's conference a little bit. Wes,
sure.
I did not introduce you very well though. so you as a background, for those that aren't familiar with you, most people listening to this podcast probably are familiar in one way or another. But you are a story brand guy. I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
And then you are also work on the marketing team at PushPay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do and all of those things?
Yeah. So a snapshot, my dad's a worship pastor of 35 plus years. So I grew up in the church from the time I started college up until about a year and a half ago. I spent about 10 years working in churches in a variety of roles, primarily would wind up in like communications, IT, production, that kind of world. Almost a year and a half ago, I became a story brand certified copywriter. So folks probably familiar now with Donald Miller, 10 or 15 years ago, wrote the book Blue Like Jazz and several other bestsellers. But about 4 years ago, he started a conference called Story Brand. It takes the 7 fundamental elements of storytelling, puts it in a framework. Businesses, nonprofits, churches can use it to communicate more clearly to customers. Because story is a way that people really get, humans have been captured by story for centuries, right? You see it in the Old Testament, you see it in the New Testament, you see it in 2017 and beyond.
Yep.
So I was a certified copywriter working with StoryBrand alumni on their, you know, websites and email campaigns and all their other marketing pieces. And then in April of 2017, I went and became certified as a guide, which is, think of it like a coach consultant. I work with people on their, not only their marketing strategy at a high level, but also can distill that down into individual marketing assets for whatever they need.
Okay.
So as part of that, I'm working with the PushPay team and the marketing side to help further advance what they do. Because like you said, the more I've gotten involved with them and seen, you know, they've got 100 full-time developers on staff.
Yep.
They've got 75 people on their customer success team. I mean, just the machine that operates underneath their technology is incredible.
Yep. Yep.
And so I'm a big fan of who they are and what they get to do working with folks like Chris Heeslip and Elliot Crowther, the co-founders, and other things. It's just phenomenal people. So that's what I do. I work with obviously PushPay, and I've got some other folks I'm working with as well, both in the nonprofit area sector as well as in the for-profit sector, to help them really, really get clear on the message so they can reach more people.
I love it. I love it. I recently just read Story Brand, the book.
Oh yeah.
And it everyone should read it, period. No matter what organization you're in, but the church, especially, I feel like it is so relative to the church and how a church can communicate their story. Mm-hmm. I want to dig into that, but I want to I'm hopping around here in this unorganized manner, which those listening to this podcast are not unaccustomed to. A double negative there. They are accustomed to me hopping around just to
whatever
from a verbiage standpoint, as you're a copywriter.
But I also graduated from an Alabama public high school. So
you've got the accent to prove it.
I do.
I that went without saying.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you confirming what everyone already assumed. let's talk about this year's conference a little bit more. Cause and I are both going to be at the conference again.
Mm-hmm.
We were just reconnecting before we hit the record button. And I was like, oh, we gotta stop and save some of this for our conversation. What are you most fired up about, having been last year?
Yeah.
As you get ready for this year, what are you sure. fired up about as you think about the conference?
A few things. I'm really fired up about Seth Godin. Getting to hear. Who? I've heard him. Yeah. This short guy from New York named Seth. He wears fun glasses and funky socks.
That's all. He's
written a few words. but Seth Godin is, if those of you who aren't familiar with him, he writes a marketing book, which seems like once a month, and it somehow becomes a bestseller every time. But he's a genius.
Not somehow, because it is the best marketing book.
He is such a great thinker.
His last best marketing book.
Yeah. He is such a great thinker. I've heard him at other events, but never one specifically for a church audience. So I'm really interested to hear that. I think that's going to be incredible. I have followed the story of Charity Water for years, but never actually gotten to hear or meet Scott Harrison, the founder of Charity Water.
Yeah.
We doing some promo for him with PushPay a couple months ago. I saw they've raised in like 10 years or 11 years, they've raised over $260 million, I think, for water projects around the world. I mean, it's incredible.
Yep.
And the way they're using technology as part of not only their marketing and communications, but their organization is is unbelievable.
And social media. I mean, they're
social media. Here's the interesting. I forwarded this to the PushPay events team a few weeks ago, but I found an article in my Evernote the other day from 2010. And it was 2 months after the iPad was released. And it was a feature on Charity Water. So 2 months after the original iPad released in 2010, Scott Harrison's being interviewed by Apple talking about how it's changed their business, because now he could hand a brand new, you know, what felt like a 12-pound iPad compared to what we have today.
Yep.
Can hand somebody an iPad with their Charity Water presentation deck on it and with pictures and videos. And he said, I'm handing it to people in the taxi, on the subway, in meetings. Yep. He said, it's a game changer for us. That was seven and a half years ago. So I'm really excited about Scott Harrison. I mean, some of the other people that are on the main stage, like Clay Scroggins, who's the lead pastor at North Point Community Church here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm really excited about Claire Diaz-Ortiz, one of the other early speakers of Twitter, or early employees at Twitter. She's a friend of mine. Getting to hear her speak about building community online with the church, I think it would be particularly relevant for this audience.
Yep.
And then when you get past, even after you get past the main stage, just the all-stars that are lined up on these breakout sessions.
Yep.
I know you're going to be there. I know our mutual friend Haley, is it Veturis? Is that your last name?
Veturis, yeah. That's how I say it.
That's what I'm going to go with.
We apologize.
Yeah, Haley. Sorry, Haley. But Haley, she's the social media director at Saddleback Church, is going to be there. Jay Cranda.
There's a girl, Holly Tate from Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Church. Holly Tate's going to be there.
She is one of the sharpest minds in marketing that I'm so glad. And she often sets up others. But she is one of the sharpest thinkers and gets the church. I can't wait for her.
Yeah.
And people to hear her.
Yeah, she's going to be good. We got several executive pastors. I mean, it's just, I'm so excited just to learn. I mean, I get to present, which will be fun, but getting to just learn and meet folks from all over the country who come in. I mean, last year we had people from all over the country, Hawaii, Alaska, even a couple of international churches, I think, in attendance. Yep. So,
yep.
And then it goes without saying that Disneyland is not a bad place to be either. It's really not.
Yes. Yes. It's an incredible, incredible environment. You know, my recommendation to those coming, come early, stay late, enjoy Disneyland, but
for sure.
Ready to build relationships. Like, don't just come to hear the Seth Godin is going to be worth the trip alone.
Yeah.
So the meat is going to be there, but I think the best value you're going to get from the conference is if you step out and prioritize building relationships, and even look at the panelists. I've never seen a group of presenters that were so available than I have at this conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so go looking to build relationships. Yeah. I'm an introvert. I'm not one when I go to conferences to go out and intentionally build relationships. But but this is one of those opportunities, and it's not awkward. It's not forced. Mm-hmm. It's not, we're not going to make you go get three buddies and hold hands and pray together.
Oh gosh.
We're going to talk shop and let's connect. And let's connect at the conference. Let's connect uh-huh. after the conference. But get there to mm-hmm. Southern California, to Orange County,
yeah,
to Disneyland, and let's learn together.
Yeah, and anybody wants to go, if you go to echurch.com/summit and use the promo code podcast, you can buy your tickets for $109. So everybody in your team, $109, which is crazy just for the price of Seth, just for the ability to hear Seth Godin.
Yes.
So echurch.com/summit use the promo code podcast for everybody on your team, $109 a piece. You cannot beat that at all.
So, and I've got to just say this from a price standpoint. Sometimes church leaders don't understand the significance of how cheap something is.
Yeah.
I heard Seth Godin at a conference here in New York within the last year. It was $1,099 for my ticket, and this was a 1.5 day conference.
Whoa.
And that's just normal. Does that make, yeah. It was sold out. I got lucky to get a ticket. This is and it wasn't just Seth Godin, but he was the featured speaker
sure.
at this event. It was Gary Vaynerchuk was one of the other guys in there that I was excited to hear from.
He's not really going to be relevant to the church space. I don't know that Gary has.
He would have a hard time speaking at the eChurch Summit. Seth Godin is just that. He's that guy that's worth the price of admission. That's
for
worth
sure.
triple the price of admission. And then everything else, which is going to be even better, mm-hmm. is worth it. So get there to the conference. This isn't a sales pitch. This is a, like, just go do it if you want to grow. Like, this is ridiculous. $109. Use that promo code podcast. So let's talk about marketing a little sure. bit. You are a marketer with words, primarily. Mm-hmm. You talked about story brand.
Yeah.
Words are important to church leaders in marketing and in everything. Can you talk about what you see? I'd love to hear you say, here's where churches do it well, and here's where churches yeah. miss the mark when it comes to words.
Yeah. I'll start where they miss the mark. We try to be too cute and clever in our churches.
That's good.
With what we do. So Nils, you know this, like, I don't know, was it 20, 25 years ago, somebody came along and said, you have to brand everything.
Yep.
You have to brand your meeting spaces. You have to brand your service times. You have to brand your groups.
Yep.
And so now somebody comes to your church on a Sunday, they say, hey, I've had 10th grade son. What do you have? Well, you know, Ignite meets for Collide in the attic. And you're like, that sounds dangerous. And what you mean was your high school students meet upstairs on Wednesday nights at 6:30. That's yes. what you meant.
Yes.
So we try to be cute and clever and crafty in our communications, because we think that's what you have to do, right? Yeah. We outsmart ourselves a lot of times and realize, you know what? Some of the biggest company in the world will just say what it is.
Yep.
You know, like, I won't say which, but it doesn't sound good when one national car rental place says, we try harder. That sounds terrible.
Yep.
Right. But you've got other ones that are just come out and say, this is what we do. This is who we are.
Yep.
So the first problem is we try to be too cute and clever and won't just say what it is. The second problem with communications is the person that we often task with the responsibility for execution doesn't get the authority to say no when necessary.
Yeah.
In too many churches, the communications director, even very large churches, the communications director does not have a seat at the executive table. And I think that's a big mistake. Mm. I wrote an article about this a while back for eChurch, and I said, if you watch, and this was kind of my anecdotal evidence, and then I found actual data. My anecdotal evidence was, if you watch Undercover Boss that was on CBS, it's been on CBS for a long time, anytime they have a CEO who wasn't the founder, so often it's the marketing person. They say, I was the CMO or I was the VP of marketing, and now I'm in the CEO role.
Yep.
Right. When you look at the data, I think it's about 25 to 30% of people come from marketing who wind up in CEO roles, which is far and away ahead of any other division or any other place somebody's not a founder of a company.
Interesting. Interesting.
So I think marketing and communications people tend to have a sense of how to position things, not just what color you should use and your font sizes, but how are we communicating things? And they also will understand whether or not things align to the vision and the direction better than most. You know, one example, I was at a church a few years ago, and our preschool director and I were both on the executive team. So that helped in this situation. But she said, we needed to promote an event of hers a certain way. And it wasn't an ask. It was, hey, we're going to do this. Yep. And she wanted it on the marquee out front. And I said, we're not putting it on the marquee out front. Well, why not? Nobody's going to come. I said, the speed limit is 55 on the road in front of our, nobody's reading it.
Yep.
Right. But, and then I, so what we ended up doing was giving a little invite card so parents could hand out to other parents of preschoolers to this event.
Yeah.
Right. If I hadn't had the authority to be on the same organizational level as her, it would have been a huge thing. We either had to do it or it would have been this huge internal struggle.
Yep.
So I think if you give them responsibility for execution, they also need the responsibility before the execution to say no and really speak into the process. Cause I think executive leaders would be surprised at how strong the leadership skills are of communications people and how effective they can be in that inner team. I mean, it's why every company has a CMO or a senior vice president of marketing, because it's so crucial.
And I think that's part of the struggle, Wes, with the church from an organizational standpoint is in the business world, you would have a chief marketing officer, which would be oftentimes on the same level as the COO.
Yeah.
Which is almost like the executive pastor in church. Uh-huh. It's hard on a language standpoint. If you call it communications pastor, communications director, what is the language you use? Because in theory, you're not necessarily shepherding a community as a pastor, you're shepherding an organization. It gets tricky from a, from an organizational naming structure. But I think to your point, it's the authority needed to be most effective in that role. That's a big
deal. I mean, I've read so many comments of people saying, I'm a communications director. My pastor said, we have to post this thing on Facebook and I just don't, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I think at some point we have to let people do their jobs and let's say, you know what, you're a communications director, you suggest it, we'll test it and we'll measure it.
Yep.
And we'll go from there. So I think that's some areas that we can improve in churches. Yep. One thing I'm seeing more and more with groups like the Church Communications Facebook group of 14,000, whatever it is now, is I do think churches are getting better at being proactive and learning what they can do.
Yes.
You know, they're saying, you know, things like 360 degree video, for example, how could we use it? How can we get a lot? So many people now of all church sizes are using live streaming.
Yep.
They're connecting it to Facebook of a church of 100 or a church of 20,000.
Right.
So they're getting better. I do think the churches are getting better at sharing information resources.
Yep.
Because one thing that is good about the internet, particularly social media, is it can create and foster a really generous culture when it comes to knowledge.
Yep.
You know, I go to that church communication group. You've got people like yourself or our mutual friend, Kenny Jang, we talked about, and others who are really out there more of a marketplace setting, but are learning things that can be of such great value to local churches and bringing that, say, hey, this is what we're seeing. This is what we're doing. This is what's working. Yeah. I know your church runs 300, but I think here's how it could work for you. And friends like Seth Muse out in Dallas and others are doing a really good job of that. So I think those are the things we're getting better at as working towards the capital C church and sharing resources, sharing ideas. But I do think though, to my first point about, we're looking at what's possible. Sometimes we get so distracted by what's shiny that we forget to make what we already have work.
Yep.
You know, like as basic as email, for example.
Yes.
Sure. Could your church have a virtual reality immersion experience on Christmas Eve that puts people in a manger? If you have a lot of money, sure.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be better to invest a little bit of money and resource into segmenting your email marketing so you can deliver more personalized content to people so that a married couple with, you know, elementary age kids is not getting an email about student ministry events because it doesn't matter to them.
Yep.
You know, I think sometimes we miss out on what's actually important and where should we actually invest our time and energy and resources in far as communications.
Yep.
So it's good. We want to get better, but sometimes we're like, ooh, this is shiny. Yeah. Yes. But you see that thing you see Elevation doing this thing, but they've also got all this other stuff under the hood you don't see that they're also doing. So,
and I hear that as I'm the king of shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
So I'm the guy that loves, and when my role was all over the place at Community Bible Church as innovation pastor. And so communications was a part of that. But I loved focusing on that new shiny object.
Uh-huh.
And I can't tell you how many misspellings we had on our website because we moving too quickly and focused on other things or an email that went out unproofed. Here's something I'm learning at Dunham & Company. So Dunham & Company, we're a fundraising marketing agency. We are big on words. So 25 of our 70 employees are copywriters. And so words are core to what we do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I never really knew or understood is the importance of editing and proofing. And what, from a just a workflow standpoint, is there something you would recommend to a church of how do you better edit and proof all of your copy, all of your content before it goes out?
Yeah. Yeah. You need to always have an extra set of eyes on it. You know, like I write a ton for all my stuff. And even then I finally thought, you know what, I'll give it a pass. I'll even run it through an app called Grammarly.
Okay.
Which is a great tool to check some grammar and stuff for you, but it's not perfect.
Yep.
Like if you put loose instead of lose, it's not going to catch that because the word is spelled correctly.
Yep.
But have a second set of eyes on it. Now, sometimes if you're in a smaller church and there's not anybody on staff, you probably have a volunteer in your church who could do that for you. Mm-hmm. But to do that also requires that you think ahead a little bit and give yourself time to do it.
Yes.
I can't tell how many times is at a church where somebody said, we have to send out the weekly email by 10:30 on Mondays. That's when people expect it. I'm thinking nobody expects it except the people sending it. But it would be 10:27 and we're just now writing it. Or somebody just sent their information. And so we don't have time to really to go through the checks like we should because we don't give ourselves the time. So getting better at having more space to be able to approve that, I think is the first step. The second step is figuring out who those approvals need to be.
Yep.
You know, if you're a small church, you don't have somebody on staff who's really good at it. Look inside your church. You probably have somebody, a current or retired English teacher, for example, would be great to help. And I'm sure they'd be willing to do it. Say, hey, can you just check this for us? Make sure this is good. Make sure the grammar's correct.
Yep.
That kind of thing. That fundamental step would be a game changer. Give yourself more time and then allow somebody to be in the process for it.
And I would with that just say, document your systems, document that structure to say, this is how it works. We write this, this is who reviews it.
Yeah.
Then we set it up, then somebody else reviews it, or whatever your system is. Have a system. When you need to move quickly, you can maybe work outside of that system. But have a core structure rather than, oh, if I have time, I'm going to send it to this person to get a second set of eyes, or hey, if you happen to be available right now. But have a structure in place for that. It will. So Judy is the lady at Dunham & Company who does most of the proofing that I'm involved in.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time that I sent her a document that she didn't change at least one thing. Her set of eyes, and I will go through it and I'll be like, this is going to be that document that she didn't catch anything. But I can look at it three or four times. Another set of eyes catches something every time. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always something significant that would be embarrassing. If I realized I would send it out. I remember CBC, I cost the church significant money because we had a physical banner created and I didn't have it proofed.
Oh, no.
And it was misspelled word on it. It's trash. Oh. It's trash. And I know I'm not alone in that, but prioritize your words, prioritize your systems. And I think church is just being intentional with, to your point, let's just communicate clearly. Communicate concisely and maximize those opportunities.
Yeah. And you know what? Another thing that I tell people all the time too is when you have a system like this in place, man, write it in pencil, not Sharpie. In other words, just because you say this is our process is not the process for forever.
Yeah.
You can always change it. You just do something. Sometimes we get so paralyzed by getting every single step down, like, oh my gosh, if I have somebody to approve it, then you know, how should I format the email that I send them to request that they, do I need an editing request form that somebody fills out? Like we just way overthink it. Just try it. And if the process doesn't work or it's clunky or you can make it better, then do it. But just start somewhere and then change it as you go and stop waiting for it to be absolutely perfect from day one.
Yep. I love it. So church leaders, we've got like 5 calls to action for you in this podcast. First thing, get your systems right. Second thing, pay attention to words, prioritize words. Third thing, and you can add to the list, Wes, if I'm missing anything, go get the Story Brand book.
Yeah.
That alone is going to help you. Maybe do that first.
Yeah.
And then maybe before that, go to echurch.com/summit and sign up for the summit because you need to be at the summit. So get registered for the summit, buy the book, build your systems around your copy and your marketing structure and process and editing and proofing and kick butt in your communication online.
Yeah.
That worked, did I get all the actions?
I think so. Yeah. It just start, just start.
Just
for the
start.
For the love of that all is good in the world, just start. You know, I think that's sometimes the biggest hurdle in communications is we think we have to have everything just perfect. You know, yes. we're gonna do video announcements. What cable brand should I buy to connect the microphone to the camera? Who cares? Just buy one. Just get, you know,
yes.
That's one of my, and I'm sure you know this, see this, Nils, because you are one of those guys who, what I appreciate is you are able to project some of what's coming down the road. I remember at Summit last year, you had the 360-degree camera,
yeah.
And we're just walking around with it. I'm like, this is crazy. That's cool.
Yeah.
But some of those things, but sometimes we get so, it's like this fear that keeps us from really being effective by saying, oh, it has to be absolutely perfect. Yep. For crying out loud, on Black Friday, McDonald's, one of the biggest brands in the world, tweeted an incomplete tweet. Do you remember, did you see this?
No.
So you can go back and find it. And then Wendy's roasted them for it. But it was like, in all caps, it said Black Friday tweet, insert link. And that was the copy, which meant that was what the tweet said, which they meant it was probably on a spreadsheet that got loaded into however they schedule their tweets. And it missed the copywriter who was supposed to create it.
Yes.
So instead of deleting it, McDonald's just replied and said, what happens when you post to Twitter before drinking your first cup of cafe coffee, and posted an image?
Yes.
And then Wendy's responded and said, when your tweets are as broken as the ice cream machine, which was pretty funny. But listen, mistakes happen. You're never going to get everything exactly right. I'm sure McDonald's has like books of processes in place, and they still missed it. It happens, but just learn from your mistakes and keep going, but start building some processes and just keep moving forward. You'll figure it out on your own. Stop trying to copy everybody else too.
I love that. I love too. Just your point about, you know, pulling it into social media, your point of just doing it. But then also avoid some of the shot. Like, I love 360 cameras. Before you do 360 cameras, make sure you're posting good content consistently. Yeah. And then move into that. And even with like your video announcements, I love you even bringing that up, because we will spend 90% of our time like checking the camera, checking the lighting, checking the audio. You know what? You can use an iPhone and that's it. Mm-hmm. And spend 90% of that time on the words, and the one you spent 90% on the words that you were going to say versus the camera and how well the lighting is, I bet the one with the words is going to be that much more effective.
I could spend $200 to buy a great microphone for an iPhone, a good tripod with an iPhone adapter on it, and a little selfie light like I use sometimes here.
Yep.
And then get in a good background and just – but that I spent $200 there, and it takes me 3 minutes to set up, if that. But I spend an hour on writing it and making sure that what I'm saying not only makes sense, but it resonates with the people who need to hear it.
Yep.
You know, I was in a church where last church I was at, I did the video announcements every week, and I would write it, shoot it. Sometimes I would be the guy saying it. And it just, about a month in, I'm thinking, all we do is ask people to buy tickets, and none of this is interesting. No wonder people ignore it. Because we're giving them a reason to ignore it. So we started spending more time on, let's write this in a way that people will find interesting.
Yes.
And actually will capture their attention and say, hey, you know what? We're offering this thing. Here's why you should attend. Not if you love Jesus, you'll show up. If you don't show up, you may not be in eternity with the rest of us.
Yep. I think a lot of people, though, would look at their video announcements and say, ooh, I bet it's because the camera isn't good enough. Yeah. If we had a red camera, then everybody would be paying attention to these videos.
Yeah. Maybe we should make the video 97 seconds instead of 84 seconds.
Yes. But those are real conversations that are happening. I mean, I love this of like, do the easy, and I say easy, the work that all of us can do.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you can afford a camera. You know, most everybody listening to this podcast is on a smartphone. You've got all the tools you need. But just think about what you're going to say and the message you're going to communicate, and don't ever undervalue that message you're communicating.
Message is critical. And I say that obviously as a marketing guy and a copywriter, but one example I use was from 15 years ago. Do you remember the infomercial for the Ronco Showtime rotisserie grill that they spent 30 minutes basically saying, set it and forget it?
Yeah.
You remember this?
I know that line, set it.
Yeah. It was, so you can YouTube the infomercials, 28 minutes and 30 seconds. Cause there's a minute and a half of commercial in there to buy the thing. But Malcolm Gladwell did a piece on this several years ago from the New Yorker. And he said that they sold $1 billion off of that infomercial, before it ever hit the Walmart shelves. $1 billion. And wow, if you watch it, I mean, it's also the early 2000s, so the camera quality is not great.
Yeah.
But it's not the slickest thing ever produced. It's not like a, you know, you don't have J.J. Abrams or Steven Spielberg directing this thing.
Yep.
It's an infomercial with really predictable audience reactions, the whole thing. But what they say and do, the message that's woven consistently for 28 and a half minutes,
yeah,
compelled people enough to buy this $100 or $150 thing for their yeah kitchen to the tune of $1 billion. Wow. Right? They spent, but it's all about the messaging.
Yep.
So we don't spend enough time in our churches talking about what are we actually trying to say to people. It's a matter of, hey, here's an event, sign up. Hey, here's an event, sign up. Hey, here's an event, sign up. Not, men, what, you know, let's say I bash men's ministry and women's ministry all the time because they're the worst offenders at this. But men's ministry, if you're going to have a men's breakfast, tell people why they should come, you know? Yeah. Don't say, hey, we're having a men's breakfast next Saturday, buy tickets. Instead, it's only a few seconds longer. Say, hey, men, what if you knew how to better integrate your faith in your workplace? Well, we're going to have XYZ speaker who's a VP at this company talk about
yeah
how do you be a man of faith in a secular workplace effectively? And, you yeah know, so how you don't get fired or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, just yeah give me a reason to want to go.
Yeah.
Don't just say, hey, men, we're having breakfast. It's men's ministry, so it's probably going to be at 4 a.m. on a Saturday. They're going to have bad coffee and stale biscuits. Like, give me a reason of what I'm going to learn and yeah then just tell me, and don't be, please don't be cute and clever with it, but just yep say it.
Yep. It's easy. We just simplified everyone's life.
I hope so.
Yep. Done. So come to the conference, hang out with Wes, tell him about how much easy, because you, now you're gonna have a lot more time on your hands because you're not trying to have the creative brainstorming meeting, trying to figure out the next name and brand of your new ministry. It just call it what the ministry is and be simple, yeah, communicate clearly. And,
yeah, and please, please spell your kids ministry with an S and not a Z. Please.
I mean, youth ministry though needs to be branded. I mean, let's be
and clear. Have you ever noticed youth ministries are always branded with something dangerous? Like Ignite or Collide or Collision. It's always something.
You just named all the ministries that I led. I did a decade of youth ministry, and I had Crossroads and Ignite and I can't even remember. I mean, you're gonna appreciate this. We called our college ministry Segway because it was like a Segway season.
Did you get to ride around on a Segway?
For like 6 months, segues? For 6 months, we spelled it in our like logo, S-E-G-W-A-Y, because that's how I thought you spelled Segway.
Yeah.
It's not how funny you spell Segway. That's how you spell Segway, the little scooter.
Hilarious.
And so I kept trying to find like Segway stuff. And then I realized, oh, it's spelled S-E-G-U-E.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. So then we changed it to that, but our domain, because we had to have a separate website, we couldn't be on the same yeah church website, was segwaysa.com.
Yeah.
So we're in San Antonio, which is a primary, yeah, you know, very Hispanic community. Everyone assumed it was Segwaysa, which I don't think is a Spanish word, but it looks like a Spanish word.
That's hilarious. And
it was the worst branded, but we spent all this time and energy when it could have just been
college.
Trinity Baptist Church's college ministry.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Just as many people.
I would encourage everybody on the podcast. So here's one thing I've learned too, is that we all assume we're talking about everybody else and not our own churches.
Yeah.
I was working at a church in student ministry, and I inherited, I forget what the group was called, but Sunday morning was like Canvas and Wednesday night was Exchange, but nobody could tell me why.
Yeah.
So I go talk to our senior pastor's executive assistant. She's been in the church. She's been in the church 25 years. Her youngest child was graduating high school that year. So she'd been in student ministry basically for a decade.
Yep.
She'd been on staff for a decade. And her husband's family had been in the church since it was founded in the 1880s. And his like great, great, great grandfather donated the original land for the building. So if anybody's going to know these answers, she would. I walk in, I sit down, I say, Miss Beth, what do Exchange and Canvas mean? And she looked at me like a deer in the headlights. She's like, I don't know. And I'm thinking, she gets more done than any of us. She knows more than everybody else. She's been a student ministry parent for a decade. She's been in all of our staffings, and she couldn't tell me what it meant. So we started calling it Sunday morning and Wednesday night. And then the last church I was at, I was trying to prove a point because, again, I was getting pushback from staff saying, oh, we need to brand it. So I went on our server internally and found our folder of old bulletins, but they were all within 3 years. Okay. And I just pulled event names. And I said, I did our executive staff meeting. People had all been there 3 to 5 years or more.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to list, I'm just going to say the name and you got to tell me if it's an event or a ministry and what it was.
Yeah.
I did 10 of them. I think somebody, one person got one right. But wow. It was stuff like birdsong. Like, what is birdsong? It was a women's brunch. I was like, why not just call it women's brunch?
That's funny.
You know, but I would encourage you, do that with your staff, and you will be shocked at how little people actually know about what's going on. Because we're too busy confusing people because we've got Seguesa instead of college, Trinity College Ministry.
Yep. Just like that. Just like that. Well, man, how can people connect with you online?
The best way to do that is, there's a couple of ways, just my website, wesgay.com, WESGAY.com. And then I'm at Wesgay, WESGAY on Twitter. I'd love to connect in both of those places.
Perfect. So go, we'll put that in the show notes as well as a link, to the eChurch Summit, to go register. So go follow Wes on Twitter. Hang out with them online and then meet up with them
for sure. At
the summit. We can't wait to see you there, Wes. I can't wait to see you.
Yeah, man.